This is the Best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, brought to you by Coach Pete at Capital Financial Advisory Group. Visit us at capitalfinancialusa.com. This is the Adam Gold Show.
6 o'clock tonight, Eastern Time. Major League Baseball's trade deadline. Before we get to the big news, Juan Soto has been dealt. It is Jacob DeGrom Day. And I don't bring this up because I am a Mets fan. And I haven't seen Jacob DeGrom pitch since July 7th of last year. Wait a second. I want to be honest. I bring this up because I am a Mets fan. Elliot Johnson never played for the Mets, played for four other teams in the big leagues. He joins us to talk a little trade deadline baseball. Did any team get better than the Mets did by adding Jacob DeGrom to the roster? He will pitch tonight in Washington.
Wow, what a question to lead in with.
Thank you. And
unrelated to the trade deadline in so many ways, but here we are. It's a great day to be a baseball fan. Well, first of all, Adam, let me get your question. But first, I want to give a shout out to Bull City Little League, who won the state of North Carolina in Durham and is headed to play in Warner Robins against Virginia on Thursday.
Awesome.
So want to give a shout out to the local boys making us proud. So Juan Soto going to the Padres, I think, makes them infinitely better, because think about it this way. Everybody that gets to hit around him is going to be better because he's going to require so much more of a taxing, or he's going to tax the opposition's pitching in so many different ways. So the guy hitting in front of him is very happy. The guy hitting behind him is going to be happy because he's going to be on base a whole lot more, which opens up holes, which is also going to make his payday a lot better because he's going to stack his RBIs. He's going to stack extra base hits, all kinds of different things. So I think Juan Soto's addition to the Padres probably has a more fundamental change to the rest of the guys on the team with the Padres than Jacob DeGrom's addition to the Mets.
You are more than okay being wrong on that. But it is interesting. The lineup, Soto, Tatis, Machado, Bell, if that's the way they were to go, my gosh, because Josh Bell's part of that deal from Washington to San Diego. And the middle of that order, probably the best middle of the order in the entire in Major League Baseball. Maybe the Yankees can come close to that because Aaron Judge is in it, and Aaron Judge is like three different people. But let me just go to Jacob DeGrom, because I wrote these down with the intent of saying it. So I just want your reaction to these stats from last year. He pitched 92 innings before shutting it down with an elbow sprain. 92 innings, 15 starts, 11 earned runs, 52 base runners, and a 146-11 strikeout-to-walk ratio. How do you put that into context?
Is that good, Adam? Is that what you're saying? Is that what you're suggesting?
Like, I believe that Pedro Martinez for 7 years was the greatest pitcher that there has ever been, and those numbers dwarf anything Pedro did.
Wow, that's hard to fathom, because I remember how special he was in his heyday. Good grief. Like, you know, Doc Gooden, good grief, he was so good back in the day. Yeah, I mean, I get it. I see what the Mets have. So I think, you know, we're gonna step into the old adage of, does good pitching beat good hitting? And typically, I think the answer is yes, because they're going to have Scherzer, they're going to have DeGrom. And I think we've talked about this in the past. It's reminiscent of having Randy Johnson and Curt Schilling going, you know, basically four games, and you only need to win four in a game of seven. So they're going to go four of the seven. And if they win every single one of those outings, they're not going to lose another series the rest of the way. And that's really all that matters.
Look, we don't know what DeGrom's going to look like. He was throwing 100 in his minor league rehab start. So the velocity is clearly there, but the command is really what has separated DeGrom from everything else, because, I mean, he's just a strike thrower, much like Max Scherzer has been. And I love what Scherzer's influence has been on the rest of the pitchers. Taijuan Walker has had a great year, and they have other good pitchers as well. And the back end of their bullpen is way better than the back end of the Arizona Diamondbacks bullpen in 2001. All right, let's get to Adam Gold in studio with my man, Coach Pete DeRuyta with the Capital Financial Advisory Group. We are talking retirement. Coach, let's say I have more than $1 million balance in my 401k.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. How can that actually come back and bite me?
Well, because, and this is a thing that we it's a mirage. You see mirages. I've ridden in the desert before. You see what's water ahead, but it's not there. Well, your financial mirage is thinking that that total balance in your 401k or your IRA is yours. We have two people that want to get a hold of it, two uncles, Uncle North Carolina and Uncle Sam.
Right.
Both of them are going to do some damage to that balance. Depending on what kind of other income you have, you could lose 40% of your value. So if you're looking at $1 million IRA, maybe it's only worth $600,000 to you. So how do we get around this? Well, you don't get around it because you end up in jail if you try to do that.
But you
can do tax planning to minimize the effect of taxation into the future. The tax train is coming, Adam. We need to make sure to minimize the effect of the derailment of our financial accounts. And for the next 10 people, we'll do it at no cost or obligation. Put together your very own tax and retirement plan.
800-661-7383 or text Adam to 21000 for Coach Pete DeRuda.
Just around the league, the Astros made two pretty important trades yesterday, getting Christian Vasquez, catcher from Boston, right before their game against the Red Sox in Houston, and then they got Trey Mancini from Baltimore. What does that do for Houston?
Was that a Byung-Young Kim reference you
were
making
there
about the Diamondbacks?
It was.
Oh, all right.
He kept the Yankees in that series.
So clearly the Vasquez move is to take some pressure off Maldonado and hopefully add a little bit more offense than what he generally produces, because he's a great catcher. He generally doesn't hit a whole lot. And not to say that Vasquez is Johnny Bench, but he is, relative to the production in the league, he's probably second behind Real Muto. There's not a whole lot of hitting that comes from that position now that Buster Posey's out of the game.
Right.
So it's a very, very pedestrian offensive position. It is what it is. So in terms of the marketplace, they've probably found themselves a guy that's going to help make them better. Mancini's a really good player. He can really hit. And, you know, they haven't had a whole lot of production from first base this year. So he's going to help them tremendously from that standpoint. I get it. But, one of the narratives that I'd like to get out there is most of these teams are so good and they're already in already that it, in a lot of ways, it doesn't really make sense for them to try to make changes because their team is already so good. Because, and that's one of the problems that we have with the teams tanking is, you know, most of the playoffs are almost settled already, Adam.
Yeah.
So it's kind of strange to be having that conversation this early, because if we turn back last year, the Braves were one game under 500 and ended up winning the whole thing, you know? So, and really give Anthopoulos a lot of credit for going out and making those acquisitions that he did, because it made a huge difference on their ability to end up winning. But a lot of these teams are so good already that really it doesn't make any sense for them to mortgage the future. But I see what the Padres had to do to try to beat the Dodgers. I get it. I understand it. I respect it. And hopefully we get some really exciting baseball from the NL West.
In a way, what the Padres did has nothing – I mean, they're not catching the Dodgers. They're a dozen games behind Los Angeles. They're not going to catch them. But what they did do was try to set themselves up for a potential series with the Dodgers, because ultimately baseball has become, like every other professional sport, a tournament sport. The regular season is one thing, and then you get to the playoffs, which is a tournament, and best team in the tournament is going to win. What you did over 162 games will get you some advantage playing at home when it matters, but other than that, that's all it got you. It doesn't. You don't have to win one less game than somebody else. If you're the Dodgers, you're still going to have to beat the Padres or the Mets or the Braves ultimately, and they couldn't do that last year.
Right. Well, you just want to get to the dance, right?
Right.
And if you can't get to the dance, you're not going to dance. And if you remember the Nationals winning a couple years ago, I think they were the worst team record-wise going into it. So that kind of just tells you just got to get to the dance, and then anything can happen after that.
So I like what the Padres did in terms of stacking that lineup and also getting Josh Hader, the closer from Milwaukee. If he's gone through a little bit of a rough stretch here, but the best of Hader should be pretty good closing out games for the Padres, and we'll see how that whole thing. Do you think the Dodgers need to react? Last year they go out and they get Scherzer and Trey Turner from Washington as they started their tanking then. Do the Dodgers need to react?
No.
Forget it. No, I don't necessarily think you're wrong about that, but that's a pretty big salvo. Those are two pretty big ads for the Padres.
Well, but keep in mind also something to think about is the Dodgers have guys in AAA. Did you see Outman came up, and I think he went 2 for 3. He had 3 RBIs, hit a home run.
They have May coming back too, right?
Yeah, and they've got Michael Bush down in AAA. I mean, they've got so many guys down there that are really good, that are probably ready, that it's just not their turn. So they've got more than enough depth. We just don't know about them yet. But they've got plenty of guys down in AAA that they didn't necessarily have to go to the market and go and get an established name. They've got guys that they can plug and play that are just as good.
It does seem like there, and Elliot Johnson is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. It does seem like there are a lot more teams than I expected being interested in being players here, even though, as you said earlier, we pretty much know who the playoff teams are. Twins were active enough. We see the Padres. The Yankees got some things on the Braves, did some fringe trimming. They did release Robinson Cano, which is the second time he has been outright released this year or designated for assignment. What is the biggest name left now that Juan Soto's gone?
That's a great question. You know, sometimes it'll be somebody that doesn't even come up. Like, I didn't see Will Smith getting traded for Odorizzi. Mm-hmm. That was an interesting little swap that the Astros made with the Braves. That was kind of interesting. They're trading from their starting depth. And maybe, you know, I don't know if Greinke's available. He probably should be. That's probably a name right. That has established track record where his pulse never changes no matter what setting he's in.
Right.
I think he's proven that, if that's what you're looking for to shore up a staff. And maybe he still moves, but that's probably somebody that's on the periphery there that would probably be better served to the Royals if they moved him.
What about Wilson Contreras?
I think the Rays are probably going to go get him.
Interesting.
It sounds like the asking price going around was a little bit too high, but, you know, I think the Cubs need to move him and get something in return for him, but it doesn't sound like it was the market was a little softer on Contreras than they thought, because, you know, you see what's already happened with Vasquez moving. So I know obviously everybody was in on the Contreras thing, but probably the asking price was too high.
So could you see the Mets going after Contreras as well?
Well, I'm sure that they are, but it's just a matter of do they need him, and is what you're giving up going to be important enough for this year? Because, I'm not as concerned about, you know, the offensive potential there as I am just somebody that's going to catch the ball from DeGrom and Scherzer. You know, that's really all that matters.
That is. Just make sure that these two guys are taken care of. All right, final thing for Elliot Johnson, and this goes back. You and I talked about, I think we just texted about it during when Juan Soto turned down the $440 million deal. And my assertion is, a player like that who profiles as maybe the best player in the game at some point, if not now, that's below market value for somebody who's 23. 15 years is way too long. If you really wanted to keep him, that deal would have been about half that length as opposed to all of that length. But the Braves signed Austin Riley to a $212 million deal for 10 years. He's a young guy and has become an absolute stud. That's a great deal for the Braves. I'm not sure it's a great deal for Austin Riley.
Well, so Riley's situation is unique. It's completely different than Juan Soto. Juan Soto has been either one of the best or the best player in the world for the last few years here, right? I mean, in the futures game, there's kids older than him in the futures game, right? And he's got, 3-4 years in the big leagues.
Right.
So Soto's different. Riley's been a little bit more of I would call it a volatile hitting career. Like, he's been on fire, right? I think he's hitting like 4-something his last, the last month of July. I mean, he's on fire. And so I don't fault him for getting for going ahead and signing and getting it done, because if you don't have a trend line that is consistent over a period of time, there is concern that you could end up slipping down. You know, I mean, even Eric Hosmer, who's traded today that I played with, he was going through a rough patch. And I remember him talking about how, if I don't figure this out, what do I do? You know, and he just got traded in this deal today. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there's guys that are a little bit different. I think Riley's situation completely unique than Soto's. Whereas, like, the AAV for what the Nationals offered, look, the reason why they leaked that out is to let their fan base know they tried to sign him for $440 million. They knew he wasn't going to say yes to that, because it's below market. You know, who says no to $440 million? Somebody who's worth more, and that's Juan Soto. So his AAV needs to be closer to $40 million. Trout's getting $36 million, Scherzer's getting $43 million. So we need to start the bidding closer to $40 million, because that's what he's worth. And if they were going to do that, if they were truly serious about him, and it's not like the Nationals don't have dealings with Boris, they would need to start around closer to $40 million, find a way to negotiate the years, and then everybody's happy. But they didn't do that. They were letting the fan base know they were probably going to move him, and it was a better deal for the Nationals if they did move him to get prospects to restock, because otherwise it wouldn't make sense for them to be that top heavy to pay him even $30 million a year and not be able to put a supporting cast around him. So easily the right decision for the Nationals, but from a PR standpoint, they have to get the fan base ready for the fact that they're going to move him.
Yep,
all that was.
And they did today. Good for the San Diego Padres, even though I'm not a general fan of the brown uniforms, but it's fine. It's old school. I'd like to see them all in yellow again. That would be interesting. But it is cool to have another team go all in, push all their chips to the table, and now we'll have some fun, I think, in October.
Let me ask you this, Adam. Sure. How is Manny Machado having such a quiet season this year in San Diego?
It's because it's San Diego. It's like if Shohei Ohtani was a Dodger as opposed to an Angel,
yeah,
it'd be insane what's going on. And by the way, next time we talk, we should speculate on what Shohei Ohtani's free agent contract will look like. Because
would love to do it, Adam.
That is going to be massive. Elliot Johnson, you're the best, my friend. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, see ya.
You got it. Elliot Johnson here on the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar, and the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup.
June 19th, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcast.
The NFL, like, Roger Goodell knew I was going to be talking about the Deshaun Watson situation today. He knew it. Yeah, Gold's going to be talking about Deshaun Watson again. Let's give him something else to talk about.
Yeah.
So, the NFL handed down some discipline on the Miami Dolphins today. Two things were in their crosshairs. Most notably, the allegations of former coach Brian Flores that the Dolphins were actively, as an organization, trying to tank, and that Flores alleges that Stephen Ross offered him money, $100,000 additionally, for each loss. I remember in his first year, I think they went 6-10, and the Dolphins had a roster that should have gone maybe 2-14. And they won six times. And it made you think, wow, not only, the Dolphins stumbled upon a legit head coach.
5-11.
Who went 5-11. That's still way more wins. That same performance got, what's his name from Georgia Tech? Josh Pastner, the ACC Basketball Coach of the Year.
Yeah.
They weren't any good, but they won a few games, and it was a joke. Well, Josh Pastner should be coach of the year if I win any games. And he was. And people fell for it. Anyway, Flores won five games that year. And then in year two, they get off to a terrible start. But they did rally and win a bunch of games toward the end. And he still got.
10-6.
Yep. Still got.
In the second year, then he went 9-8 last year.
But still, they got off to a terrible start last year. I forgot there was 3 years there. He went, and at 10-6, I think, did they made the playoffs that year, but no, they didn't. Okay, 10-6, that was the expanded playoffs, the first expanded playoff. Anyway, we'll figure the whole thing out here. Anyway, he got fired last year after 9-8, but they won like seven of their last eight games or something like that. They did lose to Urban Meyer in London, which is a fireable offense in and of itself. But Flores, on his way out, accused Stephen Ross, the owner, of incentivizing losing, which you cannot do. The NFL ruled today that, that didn't happen. We don't believe Brian Flores, couldn't get anybody else to really corroborate that. And I'm not even saying the NFL's wrong here. Just think they basically dismissed Brian Flores and also said in the statement today released by the league that, Stephen Ross was joking when he said that. All right, that's your story. What they did ding the Dolphins on was
tampering with Tom Brady all the way back when he was still with the Patriots, before the 2019 season, the last one before the pandemic. They've found that the Dolphins as an organization had contact with Brady about his future after the Patriots. Everybody knew that that was his last year in New England. He was going to move on. The Dolphins wanted it to be to Miami. There was some there's some mention about going after Sean Payton as well. And the tampering with Brady continued while he was in Tampa, winning a Super Bowl. So the NFL hit the Dolphins with the loss of a first-round pick in next year's draft and a third-round pick in the following year's draft. But no punishment, it appears, for incentivizing losing.
This is the Adam Gold Show.
Over the crossbar! And the Hurricanes have won the Stanley Cup!
June 19, 2006, but it all started May 6, 1997 with the announcement that the Hartford Whalers were coming to North Carolina. It's a story of transition, of heartbreak, of figuring it out on the fly. The Canes Corner look at the 25th anniversary of the move. Presented by the Aluminum Company of North Carolina. Listen now. Find Canes 25th Anniversary wherever you get your podcasts.